It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Shapp, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And by Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Shapp.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Shapp. Xander Schauffele is a major champion. He wins the 2024 PGA Championship at Valhalla. Here are his comments, fresh off signing his scorecard.
It feels amazing. Just a wide range of emotions for me. Very satisfying win. And I really can't wait to get back and celebrate with my team.
Xander Schauffele shot a first round 62, which set the course record at Valhalla, before Shane Lowry shot a 62 in his third round to tie Xander's course record. The previous course record was set by Jose Maria Olazabal at Valhalla. Xander Schauffele, after rounds of 62, 68, 68, 65, is your PGA champion. Here were some more of his comments after his win.
Yeah, I mean, I've become very patient, not knocking off any wins in the last couple of years. The people that are closest to me know how stubborn I can be. So winning. I said it earlier, it is a result. I mean, this is awesome. It's super sweet. But when I break it down, I'm really just proud of how I handled certain moments on the course today. Different from the past. My goal was to get to 22 today. I told Austin when we turned, if I can get to 22, I think, you know, someone's going to have to beat me. I really didn't want to go into a playoff with Bryson. Going up 18 is just not, with his length, it's not something that, you know, I was going to have a whole lot of fun with. But I was able to capture that moment there. Getting up and down 17 was really big. And then that chip there on 18 was big for me as well. So I just kept telling myself I need to earn this and be in the moment. And I was able to do that. I was pretty nervous. I walked up, I saw a little left to right. I kept reading it. I kept kind of panning. It started to look right to left to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is not what I want for a winning putt. Fortunately, it was uphill. It was, you know, 6 feet-ish. I ended up playing it straight. It did go left, caught the left side. Just so much relief. When it lipped in, I don't even really remember it lipping in. I just heard everyone roaring. And I just look up to the sky in relief.
Xander Schauffele with a birdie on 18 gets him one shot better than Bryson DeChambeau. DeChambeau shot 20 under par for the 4 days. Victor Hovland finished third. Thomas Dietrich finished tied for fourth with Colin Morikawa. Justin Rose finished tied for sixth along with Shane Lowry. Billy Horschel, Justin Thomas, Robert McIntyre, and Scottie Scheffler all finished tied for eighth. The next major is the U.S. Open. It will be played at Pinehurst No. 2 over Father's Day weekend. Coming up in this edition of From the Short Grass, about a month ago, I had the chance to go down to Dallas, Texas, in the Invited Celebrity Classic. I had a chance to sit down with Blair O'Neill. For those who don't know who Blair O'Neill is, after 4 years of collegiate golf at Arizona State, she played professional golf for over 10 years while also establishing a modeling career. She was the winner of Golf Channel's Big Break Dominican Republic and was the runner-up of the Big Break Prince Edward Island. She has walked many runways, she says, and has been featured in a variety of print, including Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, Maxim, Golf Digest, and Men's Health. A few years ago, she started work in television. You might see her on several Golf Channel programs, but most notably as co-host of School of Golf. Blair O'Neill coming up after the break. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group. Matthew Allen and Blair Allen. They know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, make sure you go to their website, bphotels.com, find one of their outstanding properties, and book it. That's all you have to do. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group, a great sponsor of From the Shortgrass. I'm back with Blair O'Neill after this.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own, to seize opportunity, to anticipate rather than react, to deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world, and to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass. When I was down at Las Colinas Country Club for the Invited Celebrity Classic, I had a chance to sit down with many celebrities and many golfers. One of those was Blair O'Neill. She gave me some time, and we chatted about golf, her life, her travels through golf, and what is coming in the future for her. On the tee, Blair O'Neill.
Blair, thanks for joining me on From the Shortgrass. How's life for Blair O'Neill right now?
Life is good. Life is busy. Happy to be out here playing in this tournament. And yeah, I've got two little boys at home and a pretty busy schedule between filming and appearances and sponsor, days and things like that. So it's pretty good just kind of juggling it all.
When did you first pick up a golf club and fall in love with this game?
I started playing when I was 11, which was really late. Before that, I was doing dance.
Late?
It was late. When I started playing golf at 11 and then started playing tournaments, these girls had been playing since they were 2, 3, 4, 5 years old. And, were shooting really good scores. But I caught up very fast.
Yeah.
I practiced a lot. I was very serious about it, put a lot of time into it. And I caught up pretty fast.
Were you self-taught?
No. So my dad got me into the game, put me in a junior clinic, loved it. And then after that, I stopped taking dance classes and started taking golf lessons. So I always had a coach throughout my career, which was really good because I feel like sometimes you listen to somebody else better than you do your parents.
Yeah.
So I'd come home from a lesson, my dad would say, "I told you to do this." And I say, "Well, sometimes it hits different."
I had to hear it from another person
exactly.
To believe it.
And so I keep that in mind with my own kids now. Like, I'm going to have somebody else tell them because it's probably not going to sink in
right.
When I tell them something.
Right. When did you realize that you wanted to try and make this a career? The game of golf, that is.
Instantly. When I was 11, it's funny because my dad has four brothers and they all played golf. And one of my uncles will tell me, when we played golf when we were 11, I asked you what you want to be when you grow up and you said, "I want to play in the LPGA. So it's weird for me to look back and think that, I was serious from the get-go. I would spend every day out of the golf course till dark. I'd go practice or play a few holes before school. Like, I was very, very, very committed from the beginning. And but I think it's kind of interesting to look back and think at 11 years old that I was that dead set on wanting to play golf.
To try and get more girls involved with the game, what needs to happen?
Well, I think the game of golf is absolutely growing with younger kids. Putting on the clinics, getting them exposed to golf, having golf courses that, are welcoming younger kids. I think that's a big thing. Even with me having, two young boys, that's sometimes a challenge to find courses that are welcoming of having young kids kind of running around and hitting shots and, and all of that. But that's important. Just getting them exposed on whatever level you can, even if it's just taking them to Top Golf or an executive course, whatever it may be, just trying to get them some exposure and at the very least get them into a clinic and let them just have fun with it, see how fun it is.
Is it fun?
It is fun. I think you play the best when you play fun, when you have fun. I actually just saw, on Instagram, an interview from Barbara Tella talking about how the key is to have fun. And it sounds so easy to say, but the scientific, science behind it is when you're having fun, you're relaxed and your mind slows down and your mind gets quiet and you're able to kind of let your natural ability and your talent just take over without your mind going so fast and overthinking everything. So having fun is the ultimate.
Do you feel like that golf on the women's side of things is more of an international game than really on the men's side?
Well, I mean, it's absolutely international because we have, you know, players from everywhere and their tour is taking them everywhere. But, you know, their tour is thriving right now as well, you know, playing for more money than they ever have and having a good schedule out there. So, you know, they're growing as well.
Your time on the big break, what was that like?
It was the ultimate. Time on the big break was one of the top experiences of my life. And it was nice that I got to do it twice. The first time I did it in the Dominican, Canada, Prince Edward Island, Canada, I finished runner up. And then the next year I got asked to do it again. They did a big break, another reunion, and I got asked to come back. And that was Dominican Republic. And then that one I won. So the fact I got to experience it twice and both times make it to the final day was amazing, but super intense. Your heart is just thumping out of your chest, and there's really nothing like it. It's super intense is the best way to describe it, but you can't understand it unless you've done it.
When you get all those people into a room, I mean, are there cat fights and stuff behind the scenes that we didn't get to see?
Well, I mean, you're living together, so yes, the competition builds up and every personality is so different. So yeah, there's a lot of drama and you see quite a bit of it on the show. But yeah, there's probably more that you don't see as well. I stayed out of that though. My personality is just like, I really focused on myself and my game. So
yeah,
I mean, that helped me.
When you were there, did they give you enough time to practice and work on your game where they're not having the cameras right on you all the time?
One of the difficult parts about Big Break is also that there are breaks in between, like, setting up the shots.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of downtime. So you might have had, depending on the weather, too, there might be, you know, weather things that happen, or they have to change stations or change all the cameras or change the looks that we're doing. So there was often a lot of downtime where you're just kind of sitting around and you're really not hitting shots. So that was a challenge of it as well of, you know, you've sat around for a while and now you've got to go hit shots. So in the morning, you get to warm up, but then after that, you're waiting.
Yeah, yeah. Working with Martin Hall on the School of Golf, what has that been like for you?
Oh, he's amazing. We love working together. I think we have a huge respect for each other. And we love making a great television show. And, you know, it's nice to be out here at this tournament. People are saying, oh, you helped my swing. Or someone walking up here, someone, you've helped my slice. I'm not slicing it anymore. And I'm like, that's what we love to hear. So we love to help people with their games, and Martin does an amazing job of just bringing so much great content every week, and our show is very visual. You know, if you watch the show, you know, we use a lot of things to kind of relay the golf swing and maybe what tips you can do to help your golf swing, and so it gets across, you know, a wide array of golfers, and everyone can find one or two tips throughout every show that's pertinent to them and the timing of their game at that moment.
What's the best part of your game?
Off the tee. Yeah, off the tee. Best part of my game has always been my distance. I've always been a long hitter. I don't hit it as long as I did now when I, you know, back when I was on tour and playing all of the time, but it's still a strength of my game and I'm still very consistent and hit a lot of fairways.
Is there a tournament that you would like to go back to and just have a do-over, maybe a shot here or a shot there? Maybe a mulligan?
Oh, I mean, there's probably so many. I'm sure. I think after every tournament round, there's one of those where you look back and you're like, oh, I wish I would have done that. But I try not to think that way because you kill yourself over that.
Nelly Korda and the way she's playing.
Yeah.
I mean, just top of her game right now.
Top of her game.
What are your thoughts on her and her game?
Well, her game's amazing. You know, I actually played with her out at the Tournament of Champions in January. In Florida, we played at Lake Nona, which is where we film our show, School of Golf, and we played the final round together, and she just hits the ball great. Good player, very focused, very confident. I mean, like you said, top of her game. So fun to watch. Fun to watch her out on the golf course.
Have you ever talked to Martin about trying to find a flaw in that swing?
We haven't talked about any flaws in her swing. I think she's doing pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So far, so good, I'd say.
She's done real well.
Yeah, there haven't been any complaints, I don't think.
You have a lot going on, though, don't you? How do you stay grounded?
I'm just trying to keep everything balanced, like I said, which is really, really hard. It's really hard being a mom of two young boys and pretty much everything in my career requires me to travel. So just balancing all of that and then being a good mom and also having a career is really important to me. So it's really hard, I will say. I think on the outside it looks maybe easy. People think, oh, how do you do it? You manage it so well. I'm like, well, there are definitely days where I struggle and I'm like, oh, am I doing enough? Am I doing enough here, you know, different parts of my life? Because I want to keep everything just very successful. And so far I've done very good with it, but it's always a challenge. It's never easy.
What would you say to some little kid, you know, girl or boy that might be thinking about picking up this game? Why should they pick up golf?
Well, obviously it's a game you can play forever. I mean, ultimately for me, you never know what people you're going to meet. You never know down the road, business-wise, what it can do for you. And ultimately it's a great family game as well. So it brings a lot of different people together. And it's just a fun game, you know, can drive you crazy sometimes, but at the end of the day.
Best golf course Blair O'Neill's ever played?
Oh, I love Teeth of the Dog in Dominican Republic. Obviously, I won big break out there, so I feel like people tend to pick a course they've played really well at, so that's one. And then I absolutely love Pebble. I love the whole space and the vibe of the whole place and just the energy out there.
Fantasy foursome, living or deceased, you and three others that you would like to play a round of golf with, who would they be?
I feel like that always kind of changes, but I would say Jimmy Fallon, I think, would be fun to play with. Justin Timberlake would be fun to play with.
Well, when you put Jimmy Fallon together, and Justin together.
Like, that, just watching that,
yeah,
I think would be fun. And you know who I also would think? He played in the Tiger Celebrity Cup, Sebastian the comedian. I think like those three together would just be a fun, like, how could you not have fun with them together?
So you just
on the
sit back and just watch.
Oh my gosh, just sit back and just listen to the comedy.
Yeah.
and the commentary. Oh, and have fun too. I think that would be a cool group. Yeah.
That would be cool. What's next for you?
Next for me, I have a handful of tournaments still coming up. We've got Drive for Kids, celebrity tournament in Coeur d'Alene, the showcase, some things with my sponsors, Cobra Puma. I just signed with Rad Golf, so we have some fun things coming up with them, and then some more things with Golf Pass, and then hopefully some exciting things with Golf Channel coming up that I can't tell you about.
We have to stay tuned.
So you got
to
stay tuned, yeah.
Awesome.
But it's busy, but it's good.
Awesome.
All good.
Blair, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you. Thanks for chatting with me.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass. I am your host, Trey Shapp. It has been a while since I've had a rules segment on the show, and so I decided, why not? Let's bring one out. With the PGA Championship just finishing, we go to Adam Carney, our master on the rules of golf, and he is a master professional with an emphasis on the rules of golf of the PGA of America. Adam has been a rules official at many PGA Championships. And here on the tee is Adam Carney.
Adam, this question comes in from Patrick in McKinney, Texas. He asks, what is the proper time allowed to hit a golf shot and to play around?
Well, it was up to me. It'd be a lot shorter, but probably most people. So
you don't like to wait.
Yeah, I hate slow play. Can't stand it.
Right there with you.
Those times are established by a committee, by the committee itself. So we hear a lot of times that, you know, a group is on the clock or whatever. There are a lot of things that go into creating what we call time par, if you will, which is the amount of time that it's expected for, you know, a group to play 18 holes of golf or to play a shot. So I can speak to, and it varies a lot. I can speak to PGA of America from the last time I worked an event. What we would do was set a certain amount of minutes that a group had to play a hole.
And that was each hole.
Yes, but it would be pretty consistent for a par 3, par 4, and a par 5. So, sure. You know, a par 3 may be, you know, 8 minutes. A par 4 may be 11 minutes. A par 5 may be 13 or 14 minutes. Who knows? I'm sure I've got it behind me here on my bookshelf, the time par from one of the PGA championships I was at. But so that we have that as one of the factors. And then we have the amount of time that a player has to play a stroke. So, and that's going to vary based on, you know, whose turn it is to play first, second, third, accordingly. So basically so if you talk about a group getting put on the clock, first of all, they have to be over that time par. They have to be out of contact with the group in front of them. So out of contact would be on a par 3, you arrive at the tee and the group in front of you has already left the teeing ground of the next hole. On a par 4, you get to the tee and the group in front of you is on the tee at the next hole. Or on a par 5, you get to the tee and the group in front of you is on the green. So, and that can be tweaked a little bit, mm-hmm. because what par 5s aren't reachable in 2 anymore, right? So you've got to be out of contact. You have to be over your time par. And that's when a group is going to get put on the clock. So a lot of players, especially on the tour, at the tour level, you know, an official will come and say, hey, look, your group is on the clock. And that's because the group as a whole has lost contact with the group in front of them and they're over time par. Now, I can tell you, at every major championship and probably pretty much every tour event, they're always over time par. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. So in that case, as long as you're staying up with a group in front of you, you're going to be fine, because an official won't put you on the clock if you're standing on the tee on a par 4 and
right.
the guys in front of you, you know, are just walking up to the green. You're fine. But the official doesn't know what player is slow. Truthfully, he does. Or she does, but, you know, we always knew who the players were.
Right. And I would always say, if that ever happened to me, I would say, can you time me individually?
Well, you do. That's automatic, right?
Yeah.
So the group gets put on the clock. So that's what they're doing, is they're timing each person individually. So now we go to, okay, how much time is it taking each player to play a stroke? So the guideline I can think of, and I'm just going to use this as an example. So to play from the teeing ground, let's say we're on a par 3, 4, or 5, you know, the first person has 45 seconds to put the ball in the air. Then the next player has 40 seconds, and then the following player has 40 seconds. Then when they walk to their balls or ride to their balls, whatever the situation may be, whosever turn it is to play first has 45 seconds. The second player has 40. So it reduces the time. It, maybe it's 35, maybe it's 30. Different associations have different, mm-hmm. you know, different guidelines. At the green, it's going to be at or around the green. So if you have a ball that's slightly off the green, that first one's going to have 45 seconds. Each subsequent player is going to have less time to play their stroke, even if that ball's on the green. So when a player gets a bad timing, that means they went over. So if your group is on the clock, let's say you and I are, let's just say it's the two of us and we're on the clock. If I get a bad timing, I've got 45 seconds to hit a shot and I take 1 minute and 17 seconds. The official's going to come up and say, hey, Adam, just want you to know the shot that you played, your second shot. I'll probably wait till they get to the green and perhaps even finish the hole.
Mm-hmm.
I want to notify them before they do it again, but if it's not practical, sometimes you don't want to. You don't want to interrupt the players
sure.
that much. So, you know, I might come up to them after they've played the shot. Hopefully, they've hit a decent shot, and say, "Hey, just want you to know that second shot you just hit, you had a bad timing on it," and I'll just walk away. You know, sometimes they'll chase you down and go, "Wait!" You know, just hey, look, I just want you to know you had a bad timing. This is your warning. Off you go. And the rules will stipulate what the penalties are. So if you get a second bad timing, typically it's one stroke penalty. A third is going to be a two stroke, and a fourth could be disqualification. And those timings or warnings continue until that group goes off the clock. So let's say I have a bad timing and I get warned. And we go to the next hole. Neither one of us have a bad timing, but we're still not in position, right?
Right. You haven't caught up to the group.
We're still out of contact with the group in front of us. We're still on the clock. And now all of a sudden we're playing, and you have a bad timing on this next hole. You know, the official's going to come up and say, "Hey, Trey, just want you to know, your third shot there, you had a bad timing. This is your warning." We finish that hole. We're still out of contact.
But we both had warnings.
We both had warnings. And we go and play the next hole, no bad timings. And we get up, and now we're back in contact, and we go off the clock. We're good. Next hole, we fall behind again. Now,
we're
back on the clock. Official comes and tells us we're back on the clock. And I take 1:07 to hit my second shot into a hole. He's going to come tell me, "Adam, you just had a bad timing. That's a one-stroke penalty." Okay? So the warnings and
they don't go away.
They don't go away. No, typically not.
Only for that round, though.
Yes, correct. Correct. Now, you know, so to answer the question, what's a fair amount of time, I would say 45 seconds is plenty of time. Now,
some can play in 20.
Yeah, some I can. Some listening to this may watch a tour event and go, "Okay, well, that guy took way over the time." You can take as much time as you want if you're not on the clock.
Yeah.
You know, if your group's not out of position, shoot, you can take as long as you want to. You know.
And some do it because of where they are position-wise, because they're trying to pace themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I remember, you know, Bernhard Langer was infamously a very slow player. And, you know, the PGA Tour set up a fine structure. I don't want to say it was because of him, but I would say he was a huge factor in that. Where they, you know, they would start with an initial fine of, I don't remember, say $2,000. I'm sure it's a lot more now. But and I remember Bernhard Langer being interviewed about it. He said, "You know, I have to pay to travel. I have to pay for a hotel. These are all costs of doing business, and this is what I do as a business. So if I get a fine for slow play but I win, it's a cost
it's
of doing
worth
business."
It. Yeah.
You know, so I kind of heard that and thought, okay, I don't want to play with you.
He's won a lot, though.
He has won a lot. So, you know, there's no easy answer to the question other than to say the committee can set up a structure, a timing sheet. So when you know, whatever club I was a golf professional at, I had what I, you know, one of the first things I do when I got there was set up a timesheet for the golf course, mm-hmm. and that was always there. And then in the notice to competitors, I would, you know, say, "Hey, look, here's the timing process for pace of play." And
right.
If you want the time par sheet, I'm happy to. I'd have it provide on the first tee if you want it. You can have it if you want it. Nobody wanted it.
Patrick, great question. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and thanks for sending in your question. If you've got a question on the rules of golf, send us an email, fromtheshortgrass@gmail.com.
That will do it for this edition of From the Shortgrass. As always, my thanks to my guest, Blair O'Neill, this week for sitting down with me at the Invited Celebrity Classic at Las Colinas Country Club in Irving, Texas. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, make sure you fix it. Look around and fix a couple of more. And I hope to see you from the short grass.
You've been listening to From the Short Grass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.